Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And we are joined today by Anna Escher, who is a Senior Audience Development Analyst at TechCrunch. You've also done some writing for TechCrunch. Anna, just tell us a little bit more about what you do here.
Tell us a little bit more about you.
Sure. So I'm an Audience Development Analyst. That means for TechCrunch that I'm doing kind of our internal reporting, looking at our analytics, making sure that our audiences are growing. I also do some stuff on the editorial side. I cover some early stage companies and work on the editorial side of some of our events that we do.
Anna, sometimes I get the sense that, like, actually, if I wanted a career in journalism and I was significantly younger than I am now, that really what I should be getting in, would have gotten into is audience development and social media. Like, do you think I've made the wrong choice?
Yeah, I think you have, for sure.
Thank you.
It is a good way to get kind of a bird's eye view on working at a publisher and seeing the different ways in which we can reach audiences and grow certain parts of the site, whether that's video or working on podcasting or just different kinds of channels that reach new parts of our audience.
So essentially, listeners, she's doing science on you.
Exactly.
She's trying to understand what you like, what you don't like. She probably knows you better than you know yourself.
True. Yeah, I do.
Oh, shit. I was expecting that. Yep, totally do.
Yeah, our audience is very interesting. I don't want to insult anyone, but it's interesting. I love our audience.
Weirdos.
I do.
We love our
audience.
Yes, you're all great.
Be weird. We love you. Anyways, what are we going to talk about today, Anthony?
Well, we, as always, are going to do a little bit of a news recap and then launch into a review of Sharp Objects. Now, normally on the show, we primarily focus on streaming shows, but once in a while, we like to branch out into stuff we just think is interesting, and hopefully you guys think is interesting, too. So this week, we're reviewing Sharp Objects, which is a miniseries on HBO, which I know, Jordan, you were a big fan of, which we can get into.
Why do you think I'm a big fan of it?
Just because we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast.
Like every week for the last 8 weeks? Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. It seems overdue, if anything. But we've been a little busy. And now we're finally ready. And we're excited that Anna is able to join us for this discussion. Before that, though, we're going to talk a little bit about the Emmys. Which is a little weird because I feel like the Emmys are something that no one really cares about except for very briefly when the nominations are announced and the awards are announced. In this case, though, it was interesting that this Amazon show, which we have not just really discussed on the show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, basically didn't quite sweep all the awards, but won a lot of them. A lot of the comedy awards, and was really, like, really dominant. And I think a lot of people had expected Atlanta was going to win a lot more awards, and then basically it sort of took all all those awards. Have either of you seen the show?
The Emmys show?
No, I'm sorry, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
No, I haven't, but it's on my list.
Yeah.
So here, I need to address something you said earlier, though, because it's like no one cares about the Emmys. I think the Emmys are now more important to me than the other award shows. Not for the entertainment value of the broadcast necessarily, although it was fine. Like, I didn't love it, didn't hate it, but for the intel on like the best shows, because I feel like I'm pretty good at keeping an eye on the good television, but there's always like a handful that are like, oh man, I know I saw a trailer for that, but I just never took the time, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true, that the Emmys as like, I mean, I think television in general over the last,
right,
like revelatory, but like television has become a lot better and a lot more sort of culturally central, I think, in the last 10, 20 years. And at the same time, movies, I mean, are still a big deal, but in some ways, I think television has been sort of ascendant in a way that movies have not. And yet at the same time, so the Emmys is like a list of interesting shows is certainly like useful. The Emmys as a ceremony, it seems like something that people don't really care about that much.
Yeah, well, also like award season is like early in the year, isn't it? Like February.
Right.
So it's like weird that like on a random Monday night competing with the NFL, we have the Emmys in September. Like, that's just super weird. right? I totally get why people are not into it.
It's like an artifact of how, like, televisions, like, the, it used to be this idea of, oh, the regular television season is, like, September to May or June.
May.
And right. then, and the most, you know, quote-unquote real shows will kind of run. But now, of course, like, shows air anytime. And so you're right that it feels much more like this random time for this award ceremony when people really aren't thinking about awards the way they are at the end and the beginning of the year.
Right. Yeah, totally. I just think people would get more amped on it if everything happened in, like, I don't know, maybe we'd get tired of award shows at a certain time. Maybe it's nice to have one or two sprinkled throughout weird times, but I don't know. I just think, like you said, like, television is kind of coming to the point where it's on par in some ways with the movies industry. And so having, you know, it's a 10-hour film. Like, I've been watching Gianni Versace, The Assassination of Gianni Versace. And, like, that is a 10-hour film, you know? And it's fantastic. I love 10 hours of a good movie. So, I don't know, having that, like, little, that list of the best stuff is nice. But I have not seen Maisel. Just to get back to our original point.
What about you, Anna?
No, I have not seen it. It's an Amazon Prime, or it's an Amazon show, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I heard about it and it's also on my list, but I have yet to dive into it.
I like Rachel Brosnahan. She won, right? Is that how you
she
say
did.
Her name?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. I like her a lot.
You know, Amy Sherman Palladino created Gilmore Girls, and I didn't realize this until Emmy night, but, like, she never won or was never even, like, nominated for an award for Gilmore Girls, which I wouldn't say that I was, like, you know, a huge fan of, but, like, I know that is, like, a beloved show, so that was kind of surprising to me. So she finally took home a bunch of Emmys, and it definitely made me want to check the show out, so hopefully we'll do that and maybe discuss it in a future episode. I think so. There are shows, however, that we have discussed on the podcast. Black Mirror, which Jordan and I discussed last year. I think the USS Callister episode won an Emmy for writing.
Best writing.
Godless, which Daryl, our old co-host, really loved. It won some acting awards. And The Crown, which is on Netflix, we haven't really discussed it. Also won some awards. So Netflix definitely took home a bunch of different awards.
It's crazy that we haven't talked about The Crown. Sorry, I'm drinking a soda.
Yeah.
How, like, it's been around for a long time, right? We're going into, like, the sixth season or something?
The third season.
Are you sure?
Yes. There have been two seasons because they only did two with Claire Foy and Matt Smith. And then they're taking...
Now they're going to, like, older Elizabeth.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched, like, the first 4.5 or 5 episodes of The Crown, and, like, there's no doubt that it's got, like, a lot of quality, but it's just, I just couldn't keep up, like, keep focused, you know? It's, like, so slow.
Yeah, it's just not something that excites me that much.
It's like a Downton Abbey style show where you're just like,
Yeah, some people go nuts for that, but I I do not.
Yeah, I mean, I want to check it out. I mean, like, so many of these shows. I think Mrs. Maisel, or I think it's pronounced Mrs. Maisel, I hope, is definitely
Maisel.
Higher on the list now.
Maisel.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to check.
Let's go with that for now. Seems like a little bit, yeah, just because of all the awards and everything is definitely higher on my list now. I mean, The Crown, I'd like to check it out, but realistically, I mean, also once a show has been going for a couple of years, there's kind of a feeling of just hopelessness and like, oh man, I'm never going to catch up. I don't know if it's worth bothering.
Maisel is right, according to the internet.
All right, well, there you go. So I watched the whole ceremony and I actually kind of enjoyed it and thought, I mean, I actually was slacking with one of our other writers, John Schieber, and I was like, I think this might actually be good. And he agreed with me, but then every single review I read of the ceremony was like, this was garbage. It was terrible. Colin Jost and Michael Che were terrible. And it seemed like no one actually thought it was a good ceremony. Jordan, you said you watched a little bit of it?
Yeah, I watched like the last hour of it. And then I also YouTubed the opening monologue from Michael and Colin.
Yeah.
And I think if you like... So for me, I love Saturday Night Live, and my favorite parts of Saturday Night Live are normally the cold open and Weekend Update. So of course I thought they were great hosts. Like, it was 100% what they do on Weekend Update, just without news headlines. It was like punchline, 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 punchline. So, and they had the same exact chemistry that they've always had. So I enjoyed it, but I could see how if you aren't into that, you might not, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was like, I think it felt very much, this is what their shtick is. This is who they are. And, you know, I like that. Apparently other people do not.
Yeah, well, and it was also like SNL did a bunch in the opening number too, right? So I think it was like, I don't know, half the country, I think, is, I think SNL is a good like dividing line between like, well, you know, the teams in America, because we are divided, I guess. So I don't know, I think a lot of people would probably not like that. And then I do, you know, I was reading some of the reviews too, and there was a lot of stuff about low energy. I didn't think that was the case. I think it was more like they spent a lot of time on the opening packages for each of the awards, it seems like.
Yeah.
And so that means less time for the stuff that we really love about award shows, which is like seeing celebrities in the audience do weird stuff, one weird moment in a speech, you know, like longer speeches, which is crazy to say because it feels like a lot of the time they go on and on. But I feel like the Emmys actually have like a bunch of interesting people winning awards back to back to back. So I don't know. I feel like there was less of what we love about award shows and more of what we don't care about. So I get that critique.
Yeah, it's a lot of new, like, up-and-coming people, too, with the Emmys and people who are getting their start on TV shows rather than these longer feature films. So it's cool to see that.
Right. The celebrities you're going to see at the Oscars are more likely to be people that you've seen on talk shows and are, like, you know, have been famous for a little longer.
Well, and I think also you, like, more famous you are, the more relatable you are. So the more we want to hear you give a live speech on television. And two, you know, we all have the celebrities we like the most. So I think in this case, there were a lot of, like, kind of curveball winners. And I really wanted to see certain people give speeches. Like, I really wanted Jason Bateman to win for direction. And he didn't. And I was like, ah, which means I didn't, like, hate the other director's speech, but I just like wanted to see Jason Bateman. I feel like there were a lot of instances of like the one you want, Jessica Biel. I really wanted to see Jessica Biel give a speech for some reason because I feel like I grew up with her with Seventh Heaven.
Right.
And it's weird to see her like, you know, be winning an Emmy and The Sinner was amazing. So I don't know. Anyway, the Emmys was fine. It was like whatever.
Were there any awards that like, I will say, for example, like I feel that David Lynch probably should have one for Twin Peaks, both for writing and directing. I just think, I mean, I didn't love everything about the new Twin Peaks, but I think that's like such a unique achievement. And the best episodes of it were just unlike anything you've ever seen on TV. So the fact that he didn't win anything for Twin Peaks, I thought was kind of shitty. I liked the new season of Game of Thrones, but I wasn't crazy about. I mean, it feels to me like Game of Thrones now is winning all these awards, and like the first few years, which I thought were the best, didn't. I mean, you know, Peter Dinklage was already getting awards, but it wasn't winning best drama. So it's this weird thing where it feels like Game of Thrones is now getting more recognized with Emmys when it's still good, but maybe not quite as good as I think it was at the beginning.
It's almost like an IOU Emmy for what it was doing in the first few seasons. I mean, it's hard to argue against Game of Thrones being a great show because it just is. But you've only seen the first and last episodes, right, Anthony?
No, I've seen every episode. This is the one show that I've actually, that has had a lot of episodes, and I've seen all of them, I swear.
Also, like, it's coming to an end, so all this new crop of shows are going to get a lot of attention over the next few years, you know, and people are already trying to figure out their kind of replacement, so to speak,
right,
for Game of Thrones. So, you know, that's interesting. I loved, and I've mentioned this already, but I hadn't seen Assassination of Johnny Versace, and they took home a bunch of awards, right? Like three, I think.
Yeah, I think at least three. And they took out like best limited series. They won best limited series.
They won Best Limited Series, and then they got Best Lead Actor, I think, and then Best Guest Actor.
I think so. Yeah, some of those weren't presented at the because the Emmys are also confusing because there's actually like hundreds of them.
Oh, they got directing too.
Right, but a lot of them aren't presented on the night of.
Mm-hmm. They're done before. So, I mean, anyways, that I hadn't seen it, but I had wanted to, and then they won all these awards, and that like instantly for me was like, let's go watch it. I think that is the value out of the Emmys overall.
Yeah.
Nice to me.
Cool. Well, should we move on to Sharp Objects?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Anna's like, please.
All right. Well, Jordan, as the first person to kind of rave about the show on the podcast, maybe you should talk a little bit about what it's about and why you like it so much.
Sure. Yeah. So Sharp Objects is actually the first, not the first book ever, I don't think, but the first big bestseller from novelist
Gillian Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn, right?
Flynn, yeah.
Yeah, and she's also responsible for Gone Girl, the book, and helped with the movie, I assume. And Sharp Objects is centered on a town in Missouri. Amy Adams plays the lead. She's a journalist who has to go back home to her small hometown in Missouri because two young girls have been murdered, and it's her job to report on the case for like her St. Louis newspaper that she works for. And it is in some ways like a murder mystery thriller show that we've seen many, many, many times before, but it in both like its aesthetic and also in like the plot itself, like that isn't the point at all. And it's really about like women and how women feel about themselves, how their relationships to one another can make or break them, and like kind of the legacy that is passed down from generations of women within their own family. And so I think acting wise it's outstanding. Direction wise, I'm not like a movie person or filmy person really, where I like know all the terms and all of the technical stuff behind making a film, but like even I could tell that like the direction in this, like certain shots were just so insane. And also just, you know, the story itself is like the kind that'll, oh man, it'll make your heart go like double time at certain points. And you also feel this outrageous empathy for these characters, particularly Amy Adams in my case. And it's just, it's everything. It's everything a drama should be, in my opinion.
What did you think, Anna?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I would agree with all that. I thought it was very well done. It's definitely hard to watch and is triggering at times, I think. I mean, there's a lot of references to like self-harm and alcoholism. A big part of the show is that Camille, who is Amy Adams' character, she was recently released from a psychiatric ward where she was in recovery. And so it's a lot about her character, and I think, and it's a deep dive, like Jordan said, into how things like pain and illness can manifest for women and how they and how those things can kind of affect the relationships between people, and also the cycles of abuse that can happen in families. I mean, a big part of the show is that Adora, the mother, she has Munchausen syndrome by proxy, which is when people, particularly women, they kind of assume this caregiving role, but they are harming the person that they're giving care to. It's known as kind of an attention-seeking illness that some people have had. So I thought it did. I mean, that part of the, like, that fact is not released until I think it's the second to last or first to last episode. But that really starts to explain everything. And that was something I didn't see coming at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the show, like, it, there's a lot of stuff about, I mean, particularly about Camille, who, which I think you maybe have seen in some ways in other shows, but like usually not treated, I think, with the sort of not just like seriousness, but like you know, that there's no attempt to glamorize it. I mean, it's glamorized in the sense that she's played by Amy Adams, who is, you know, an incredibly successful, beautiful woman. Like, but like other than that, like it's, you know, like you really get into like what her, you know, her stay at this psychiatric hospital. There's a lot of attention paid to like things like vomiting, to, you know, like, and the self-harm too. I mean, I think we've seen like shows that have characters who, you know, do, you know, cut themselves, but usually it's, you see it and it's like sort of like a, this character mark, but it's not like here it's physically, you know, it, because they really show over the course of the show, they really show it to you. Like it's actually like deeply upsetting.
Yeah, it really is. And 100%. I don't know if you saw any of the interviews that Amy Adams did after the show, but she talks about how she used method acting to portray Camille, which I thought was really interesting. And she doesn't really go into the methods that she used, but she, like, I don't know if that's the term for it. But she really said that it affected her very deeply to play Camille, and it brought out or she was able to connect with different parts of herself in order to portray Camille so well. And it's been interesting to watch her career. I mean, she's one of my favorite actresses. She's incredible. And, you know, her career has kind of taken a darker turn in the past couple years. She's no longer playing these kind of cheery, innocent female roles and is taking on more serious characters and characters who are, you know, less innocent, like in the Arrival and Nocturnal Animals and Sharp Objects. And so I think it's been really cool to see her progress as an actress. And I think it really kind of culminates in Sharper Objects for sure.
100%. Yeah, I've always been impressed with Amy Adams. And it's funny, if you go back and watch TV shows or like rom-coms from 15 years ago, she's like always in them at some point, like as a guest actress. And she's,
yeah,
like,
she was on Buffy.
Yeah, she was in The Office. Like, yeah, she's in like all this stuff.
Do you guys remember her in The Office as the purse saleswoman?
Like, she's like essentially the most like generic character that could possibly exist. But like, that's what I'm saying. She's been in so many things, and like really, it's a travesty. I've said this before, that she doesn't have an Academy Award. Hopefully
she should have won for Arrival. Absolutely.
Yeah,
she should have won for Arrival, but I think she should have won for a handful of other movies too that she's been in. I mean, she's just, and I wasn't a huge fan of Nocturnal Animals, but like I'll never stop being a fan of Amy Adams. But then there's also Patricia Clarkson and like Eliza Scanlon, who played Emma and Adora, and they, I hate even to say rose to the level. I guess in Eliza's case, she's like a newcomer. And so for her to be on camera with Amy and be in that and be like an equal with her is astounding. And then, you know, Patricia Clarkson just raises the bar as well. So, I mean, on that front, I think they've got all their bases covered. But like, I think the number of different themes that play throughout this and the way that it's not like harped on, nobody's ever telling you like this is the message that you should get from this, but you see throughout like surface versus reality, like not just with Amy and not just with Emma or Patricia or with Adora, but like with the whole town, right? Like the sheriff and the husband, and it's just, it's spooky. Like that almost is scarier than the idea of young women getting murdered, is the idea that everybody can kind of fake it all at once. Cause then you really don't know what's real, you know? And that is what like gives the shivers to the whole show.
Yeah, totally. I thought something interesting too about when you're looking at Wind Gap as a whole is that every woman in the town is sick in some way. Like they do a good job, I think, of kind of seeing, you know, that the woman who's the mother, who's the meth addict, who she needs to speak with for her journalism. And then even like the mother is sick, and like every single person, there's some element of like illness for them, except for the men. Yeah. Like all the male characters are fine. And, you know, the detective is fine. The dad is completely oblivious to everything. Or is he? I don't know. But he's fine. The detective is fine. But it's the women who really embody that those themes of illness and how they're dealing with it.
Another aspect of that was also just how they depicted alcohol and drinking, where, again, I think that's something that's so easy to get glamorized, even in something that, like, ostensibly is about someone who has, like, might be an alcoholic or something. Like, a lot of times, like, just, you know, the way you see it on screen, it doesn't look that bad. But here, like just everyone is such an alcoholic, and there's so much, like, the people are, like, trashed and getting in their cars. And I mean, obviously, this is sort of, like, it's easy to sort of, like, focus on that as, like, sort of this, like, superficial point. But I think, like, it also speaks to just, like, it just seems like everyone there is, like, a wreck who's, like, self-medicating. But in this way that you empathize with, it doesn't feel like it comes from nowhere. But, like oh, you see, like, this town, like, there are so many, like, economic and psychic, like, problems there.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is, like, you see Chris Messina's character, who plays a detective who's not from Wind Gap, come in and be the outsider. And by the end, in a lot of ways, he's kind of been chewed up and engulfed in that same sickness, you know, of, like, not knowing truth from reality, definitely drinking, definitely making decisions he probably wouldn't make otherwise. And the same thing with Amy Adams. Like, you get the sense in when the show opens, she's in St. Louis, and you definitely get the sense that she's not, the kids are not all right with her. You know what I mean? Like, she is drinking heavily. She's, like, got that slumped walk, that sadness, and, like, she's not cool, but she's got it to a point that she can manage it. You know, it feels like a little bit.
Or at least she thinks she can.
Exactly. Like, she seems, like, not great, but, like, okay. And then she gets to Wind Gap and, like, whoa, she just gets herself into shitty situation after shitty situation, truly, and, like, just gets worse and worse almost, but comes out the other side, you know? So, I don't know. It's interesting. The whole thing was just, I was so into it. I can't even explain.
Yeah, I thought another point to bring up along the lines of using kind of the alcohol as escapism, I thought the way that the show uses music as an escape was really good too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I went back and looked at the score, and it's really incredible. Like, there's a lot of kind of down-tempo music with a hint of sadness from the 70s and 80s. And some of the music is about addiction itself. There's a lot of music about the relationship between mothers and daughters. Like, you have Tupac's Dear Mama and Motherless Children by Steve Miller Band just kind of slid into it. And, you know, yeah, in the actual show itself, you have those kind of long cuts of Camille driving when she's listening to music. And those are kind of the only times where she feels happy. And then you have also in her flashbacks to rehab, the poor girl that she was roommates with, you know, she just used her iPod, and that was kind of her only source of happiness during those dark times.
Well, it was interesting, too, how that connected with the stepfather character, who also has this, you know, like, amazing audio setup, and that, you know, anytime anything tense or bad is happening, he just immediately goes back and starts, like, puttering with that instead of dealing with whatever's actually going on. So, like, that, like, it was this escape in different ways for different characters. I also just really like, yeah, the iPod, and, like, at first you're kind of like, why is she, like, using this shitty iPod to listen to music, like, what's going on there? And then when you actually get the explanation, it's so devastating. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they use, like, speaking of, I don't know if we're still on music or not, but they use, like, a ton of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And, like, they didn't really, they played, I think, like, Thank You or In the Evening, one of the two in the finale, but they had played the intro to it, like, a number of times, and they didn't get to the guitar solo until the very end, until, like, the big reveal. And a bunch of people were talking about how, like, if you had paid closer attention to the music throughout, that by, like, episode 5, you'd know what's happening. which might be a bit of a stretch, but, like, if someone was really sitting down, writing down every word. There was also a scene in one of the episodes, I can't remember which one, I think it's when she goes to the party with Amma and is roller skating through the town, and they play Ghost by Acid, and, like, that scene is just so intense for just like knowing that they're like tripping balls and riding down the street in this scary ass, like tiny little town with that song playing is just, ugh, yeah, it's too much.
That scene is crazy.
Well, one of the other things they use is the sort of like the placement, I mean, of the, like, you know, words basically, which are like, I think in some cases are things that are happening that are actually there in the scene, like obviously Camille's body and certain signs and things, but also, you know, these like weird, not quite like almost hallucinations that she's having. The one that like I think really got to me was like there's one part where she like leaves her car and then there's like writing on the car that says scared. And then she comes back and it says sacred. And then like, you know, there's like all kinds of stuff like that, which most of which I didn't even catch consciously until like I started going down the rabbit hole of all the different like online articles that have cataloged this. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, I definitely noticed some and was like, oh, this is weird. I wonder what's going on here.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like I saw the words flash and stuff, but didn't take the time to like go and catalog them. And I looked back at all the scenes where they show up and it's not just with her, right? Like it's... There's like writing on the side of the sheriff's car, I think, at one point. And
yeah, I think that's right.
Like stuff on a desk at some point. Like it's not always, it doesn't always have to do with Camille. But yeah, I think everything but the actual plot itself kind of points you in the right direction, which is what I think is so cool about this is like normally you would have your list of suspects and you'd kind of narrow down by halfway through and you'd kind of have an idea. It's like, what is it? You remember in The Office where they play the murder mystery and Dwight's like, it's Beatrix Bourbon because she's not the person I most suspect and she's not the person I least suspect. She's the person I medium suspect, you know? And like, you kind of do that. I feel like when you watch shows like this, trying to figure out like who the bad guy is. And I feel like I was caught on who the actual killer is, like every other episode changed my mind. Do you know what I mean? And I love that. I loved like not quite being sure until they told me, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Did you guys have an idea of who the killer was before it was revealed in the last like 10 seconds of the show?
No, honestly, no, not at all. I think kind of the... If you compare sharp objects to kind of the typical storyline of detective novels or detective shows, there are a lot of points where it kind of deviates from how a typical crime story would progress. She wasn't following the trail back to find the culprit or like the source of the crime. She was living in the source of the crime and she found the answer to the case. Like the detective didn't figure it out. She figured it out only because she became the victim herself. So I think it was a really unique way to tell a detective story.
By the way, I think we should say that at this point, I mean, we've kind of... done this a little bit already, but let's just openly say if you have not watched all of Sharp Objects, you should probably stop watching because we're gonna spoil the hell out of it.
Yeah. Stop listening to us. Definitely stop
listening. Yeah, sorry.
Like, go ahead and leave us now because we're getting into even more spoiler territory. Although I think it would be hard at this point. I don't know. Maybe you've never looked it up or anything before, but I feel like all of that stuff was the Munchausen stuff was all pretty known at this point. Also, especially since the book's been out for like ever.
Like, right. But I mean, I went into the show having no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I watched them the night they came out. So nobody spoiled anything for me throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think also like Eliza Scanlon, again, I've said it before, but like playing the role that she did and weaving between so many different personalities and playing that manipulative person, just I was just so impressed by that whole performance, you know? And you like, it's easy to kind of forget her in the midst of Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson, but if anything, like she really carried it, that makes it sound like everybody else slacked, but she was up there, you know, like she was in it. And if she hadn't brought it to the same level as Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson, then it wouldn't be the show that it is, honestly, because it kind of hinged on her. Nobody was worried about Amy Adams failing at this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also it's interesting, you know, talking about the mystery, and we were talking earlier about, like, how there's so many other things kind of going on in the show. And definitely, so my experience of it was, with the first 7 episodes, I liked it. I definitely didn't, like, I think, love it the way maybe you did, Jordan, or some other people did. I was like, this is a good show. I really am, find Camille to be a compelling character. I like the portrayal of the town, and then, like, just like the texture of the town. The mystery was sort of beside the point for me, and that's, I think, a lot of how I experience a lot of mysteries, where I just am not necessarily that interested in whodunit. I like using the mystery as a mechanism to sort of explore, you know, characters and settings. But then, like, the last episode to me, like, just took everything to this whole other level, where it all came together, and where I was also just, like, in agony for the first half of that episode, where they're, you know, where she's basically, you know, deliberately accepting poison. And I, like, kept, like, making these, like, pained noises as I was watching it. Like, that whole sequence in the house is just so well done and so agonizing.
Yeah, and it's, like, the moments that you finally... Because, like, you understand in the 7th episode, I believe, that she's got Munchausen's by proxy. And that's been established, right. And we figure that all out. But then it's not... And we've actually, like, seen that play out with Emma, right? Like, in earlier episodes. So we know what it looks like, and we know that it's the truth, but we don't really know how it feels until the 8th episode. And a lot of that comes not only from just, like, Amy Adams going through this and kind of watching it play out on screen, but also, like, the bathtub scene for me was one of the hardest to watch, because it's the only time, I think, throughout the entire show that you see Adora be what you expect a mom to be, you know? And she's sitting there and she's flicking her with water and she's kind of joking with her and poking fun at her, but she loves her and she's being sweet to her, and it's just...
And she's being vulnerable. Like,
yeah, it's, yeah, like, this mind fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this whole thing where out of nowhere she becomes the mom that, like, clearly Camille needed her whole life. And it's only because she's got her wounded, you know? And it just, I don't know. I think that to me was, like, one of the most, like, kind of heart puncturing scenes, was that scene in the bathtub.
Well, she also does that line. She tells her, "Oh, you're actually, of all my daughters, you're the one who's the most like me," which I found just, yeah, like, really, like, painful and chilling.
Absolutely, because she's actually not, right?
I mean, she seems like the one, yeah, who's, like, the pain has sort of manifested in really different ways. But I guess, like, in that idea of, I don't know, maybe just in that moment, that's how she sees her. But yeah, I mean, I think that definitely Emma seems a lot more like Adora than Camille does.
Yeah, I would say that too. I think that just comparing Camille and Adora and the way they kind of manifest their pain, Camille is, you know, Adora, she wants, you know, this attention. Like, her illness is kind of an attention-seeking disease. While Camille, you know, her suffering is, it kind of shows in the way that she pushes people away. And, you know, she hides her body, even from her love interest. She hides her vodka in the water bottle. And she, you know, she's very, like, discreet about her suffering.
Yeah, well, and also if you think about it, like, Adora always wanted the love of her mother and didn't get it. And Camille was the same way. You know, at the end of the day, she just wanted to be held and taken care of, and she wasn't, you know. It was always someone else. So, yeah, I don't know. I watched, following this, I started, like, Googling Munchausen by proxy, which has to be, like, one of the scariest. And I actually think that there is some, I don't know if it's, like, a bill in government or it's doctors or someone's trying to, like, petition for the name of it to change. Because Munchausen by proxy is not something that people, if you're like, if you saw that in the wild, you wouldn't Google Munchausen by proxy. Yeah. So they're trying to make it, like, a more of a term that actually is closer to what it is. But, yeah, I Googled it and started looking into it, and there was that whole story. I forget what their names are, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's like Dee Dee something.
Yeah, girl. Like Mommy Dearest, and was the name of the documentary about it. But it's like this very famous case of Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Oh, Gypsy Blanchard was her name. Mommy Dead and Dearest.
Oh, I wonder if you guys are thinking of different cases.
Yeah, maybe.
I doubt it.
I wonder how common it is.
Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Blanchard.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's like the mom one. And the yeah. daughter.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and like the daughter had her boyfriend kill the mother because the mother had made her think that she like couldn't walk and like...
Oh my God.
Like made her think that she had like 20 different illnesses. And by the time she was like... It was interesting in the... I don't like we're kind of on a tangent now, but whatever, it's the end. And one of the doctors or whatever from the documentary said, you know, like she could physiologically or like psychosomatically, she could like keep her under control until she became a teenager and like her hormones started going, because like your sex drive like doesn't really go away unless you're like really actually sick. And so especially like as a teenager, it's like that is what like thwarted the mom's plan essentially the whole time, was this girl just like, you know, becoming a woman and being like, I want a dude, bring on the dudes. And like that's how it all ended. I don't know, that was probably useless to share here, but
well, I mean, what did you guys think about like, I mean, one of the things I when I was reading about the show realized is that the way, I mean, the solution and the, you know, the identity of the killer is the same between the book and the show, but the book actually goes further, that it actually shows us Emma in jail, shows us like Camille trying to deal with this knowledge, whereas in the show, right, you basically find out and it immediately cuts to black. I mean, I thought that was like, that was amazing. Like, I just did not, to end on that note is, like, such a, like, you know, just a real, like, kick in the gut. Like, just felt, like, really, like, just, I was so impressed and, like, devastated.
Well, and, like, the reveal itself, like, the way they go about it, and again, these are spoilers, but, like, finding it in the dollhouse, and after having seen that dollhouse so many times, and it been in the house, and watching her be so obsessive about it, and it like ties back into all these themes of like appearance versus reality. And I don't know, it was so well done. Those last, you know, 2 minutes or whatever were just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Right when you think you're okay too. It was just insane.
Yeah. And it's right after her friend goes missing too, or like her friend's mom comes and says, "Hey, have you seen my daughter?" And
yeah.
So, you know, she might be Amma's next victim.
Right, and you see a very brief, like, and then so there's, like, the very brief scenes during the credits where you actually see Emma, like, killing people, but, like, not even in, like, only for, like, half a second at a time, and I think she is in that, like, montage of murders.
Yeah, 100%, and she looks so gruesome. Like, it's actually, what's impressive about it is we've seen, you know, to date, to that moment, we've seen like 2 to 3 versions of Emma. We've seen like cool girl, but not out of control. We've seen like out of control, hyper popular, manipulative girl. And we've seen like perfect daughter, you know, perfect angel daughter. And then you get this glimpse of like side number 4, which is like in a rage, murderous, you know, bloodlust. Like, and that's crazy. And you get 15 seconds of it, but it's more than enough. You know, it's like, oh shit.
Well, and that, like, even within that hour, right, like, you've seen her at her most vulnerable, being poisoned, you know, like, on the floor, unable to go for help. And so, like, to, yeah, within that span, see those sides of her. And I think it, like, does, like, what this show, one of the things this show does so well is that, I mean, I think other stories can, like, gesture towards this, but, like, this really captures this idea that, you know, Emma in particular is both, like, the murderer and also a victim. And like mm-hmm. both of those things are part of who she is, and they feed into each other in ways too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Are there any other things, final thoughts on Sharp Objects?
Watch it.
Yeah, watch it. I had one final thought that I was like observing while I was watching it. And I think that Amy Adams just really nailed the female reporter archetype, and like looking at this from a journalism perspective too, it's like it's a really unique way to talk about conflict reporters' relationships with their stories and how, you know, your sources kind of make up, or in this case, like her sources kind of made up who she was. And she was only able to solve the case when she reverted back into her old identity as someone growing up in Wind Gap. So I thought it was a cool statement about journalism too.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that one. I would say just to like protect female journalists out there, like she was not a great investigative reporter by any stretch. Like she rarely took notes. She was wasted. She slept with her sources. She like convoluted her professional life with her personal life, which I think she's a very broken person in general. And she was in the midst of a broken situation, a broken investigation to begin with.
But I mean, the end result was that amazing story that she wrote.
I think she's an incredible writer.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think she like feels things very deeply, and that gives her like a sense of intuition that maybe not everybody has. But like in terms of like, I wouldn't say that she's a good archetype for a female journalist, because there are lots of very responsible professional female journalists out there that write stories that do not get wasted and sleep with people,
yeah, and endanger their own lives. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like, yeah, but yeah, I get what you're saying, but I just wanted to make sure we tack that on there at the end.
I will say, I mean, I think she is definitely both, like, you see her talent and her dedication, but also, you know, that sort of like complete lack of boundaries, professional, personal, or whatever. Like, but the one small thing that really got to me was there's a scene at the funeral for the second girl who's been killed, and she insists that she has to take notes during the funeral. And you see the notes, because if I were in that situation, I was taking notes, I would basically be writing down quotes, right? But she's just being like, oh, this person looks terrible. This person looks terrible. And I was like, really? Like, you needed to, like, interrupt, like, make this, like, loud, like, scribbling sound so you can, like, just, like, shit-talk everyone in your notes? I was not impressed by her notes.
Yeah, her notes were no good. Let's just put it that way. She doesn't have the same Evernote library that I do. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't useful. They weren't like quotes. They were just like scribblings of like during like a funeral.
Right. And there weren't like details either. It was like, oh, this person is wearing this. This person is clearly. It was just like, this guy sucks. She sucks.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, and when she's interviewing the father of the victim, she doesn't really get anything done. I think my point was more towards like how hard it can be to be a conflict reporter and how it can really take a toll on a journalist.
Absolutely, especially when that conflict is like your family.
Yeah, like your exact family.
All right, cool. Well, Anna, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Anna. And before our listeners leave, just a quick reminder, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on pretty much any other podcast app. And thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.